It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 344, and I am your host, Adam Mangum. The Cougars bounced back with a victory against Hawaii, but what does this win mean for the rest of the season? Matt and I break down Zach Wilson's performance, the changes made on defense, and whether any of this changes how we feel about potentially beating Boise State and Utah. Also on the show, women's volleyball and bowl projections. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout Podcast. Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast service, and listen to Matt and I right now. So, Matt, what are you dressing up for Halloween this year?
What would I dress up for?
I don't know. What are you going to dress up as?
I don't need to dress up.
Why don't you need to dress up?
You hear this sound right here? Can you hear that? That's me digging into a bag of candy that I got without having to dress up.
Oh my gosh, dude, it's not about, I'm not asking as an adult if you're going to go door to door and ask for candy. I'm asking if you're going to.
Peanut butter pumpkin. It's delicious.
I'm going to ask you if you're going to stop being such a stick in the mud and actually have some fun for once in your life.
I think I'm going to have some fun eating this piece of candy right now. No, okay. I haven't dressed up in several years. I'm going to be honest with you. That's not true. Maybe
several
I dressed
years?
Up last year.
Since
a couple of years. I don't know.
Since like 1996?
Maybe, possibly. That's possible. No, I know I've dressed up since I've been married. I do know that.
Okay, I've dressed up every year of my life except for 1 year in high school and the 2 years of my mission.
I doubt that you didn't do any Halloween costume at all on your mission. Somehow I'm not buying it. I know you. I know you, Mangum.
I didn't. Those 2 years I took off.
Your family and your Halloween costumes are kind of a thing of legend.
Yeah, well, we're doing.
So I don't know that I buy it. What are you guys doing this year?
We're doing Harry Potter for the second year in a row, but all different characters. So I was Professor Snape last year. And
you made a good Snape, if I recall correctly.
And I did Alan Rickman's Snape accent the entire time.
You actually were, if I remember, you did part of it on the podcast.
I did.
And you were practicing it for several days in advance.
Oh, you better believe I was. And Alan Rickman's a legend. The guy's amazing. I love Alan Rickman.
Yeah. Oh, unreal.
May he rest in peace. He's an amazing, amazing actor. And we've been watching some of those movies again, and he's just so good. I mean, he's not in a ton. He's just so good. And
he's very good.
Of course, you know, my favorite role of his is Hans Gruber. You know, in Die Hard, he's quite amazing. But this year, I'm going to be young Albus Dumbledore, so I will be from the new movie. I will basically, because a lot of people say I look like Jude Law, so it makes sense.
Yeah,
people say that all the time.
Yeah,
so I'm growing
sure
a beard.
You get that all the time.
I'm growing a beard right now. I'm in beard growth mode.
You're growing a beard for the part.
I've done this
before. You are truly a method actor for Halloween.
I grew chops for, you remember, for Wolverine.
I remember.
I grew out a beard and then I shaved it and just left the mutton chops for Wolverine. I've done facial hair for several costumes, actually. I've done facial hair before. This isn't
Maybe I'll grow a beard for Halloween.
Who are you going to play?
I just want to have a beard.
Yeah, well, go do your patchy little beard.
My patchy little beard.
Yeah, that's all right. It'll be fun. We should do a beard growing competition again.
It only weirds people out because then I have more hair on my face than I have on my head.
Well, you're not the only one that would do that. Well, Matt, let's go to the CougarFan.com. Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, the BYU women's volleyball team is still undefeated.
This is because they're awesome and they're going to the ship. They're taking the whole thing.
So they have.
Can they be stopped? I mean, seriously.
Well, this week will be an interesting test. They've got at least two quality opponents. Loyola Marymount is 15-4 and 5-3 in the conference, and then Pepperdine is 7-1 in the conference and is doing pretty well. I think they'll sweep both of them, but you know, at least these are somewhat decent opponents.
They are. And traditionally, these are good programs, right? But I think it's important to note that BYU has beat Pepperdine 13 times in a row, including a sweep earlier this year.
Yeah, yeah.
And they beat Loyola Marymount four times in a row.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not.
And never lost to them at home.
No, yeah. I this isn't the week they go. They lose. They lose.
But
a match,
these are games you could lose, right? These are matches. They're good. That you could lose.
They're good enough that if they're not paying attention, if they're looking past them, if they're looking, you know, toward. But quite frankly, they're. The conference tournament is probably not – the conference schedule is not going to challenge them, right? Once they get to the NCAAs is when they're going to find some challenge. So,
yeah.
You know, but, hey, they keep rolling. And congrats to them for doing that. Again, that's Thursday night and Saturday night.
Yeah, rolling through undefeated like this is hard in any sport.
Nope,
right?
It's true.
It's a long haul type of thing to have to do. You know, they've been playing games since September, right? This isn't like a once a week deal. So, yeah, that's tough.
It's tough. So,
they're just smoking people.
Just amazing. Amazing. Well, let's talk about some of the BYU Cougars in the NFL. With the first pick in the NFL draft,
sit down, Goodell.
John Gruden selects. They might have the first pick. The Raiders might.
Yikes.
How much are they paying him?
More than they should.
Well, do they go for a quarterback? I'm serious. Well, do they, if they have the number one pick in the draft and you're the Raiders, are you doing a quarterback?
What else are you going to do with it?
But I guess you have Derek Carr.
Right.
He's a quarterback of the future.
Right. Of course he is.
Of a 1-5 team. But anyway, we're not here to talk
about Derek Carr. Until the Giants use him to replace Eli Manning.
So, yeah, well, the Giants need a quarterback, but that was true last year when they didn't take one.
And I don't know. I mean, who are the quarterbacks going to be? The guy out of Oregon?
Yeah, I mean, Herbert's—he's the guy, right? He's the one everyone's talking about. But here's the thing: there's some decent quarterbacks that the Giants could have had, and they did not do a quarterback. They get a running back because Eli can take him to the promised land again. And they were the only people in the NFL that believed that.
And I'm not even sure they believed it.
I think they believed it. They didn't act on it.
Well, I feel bad then.
So Taysom Hill had an off week, so we don't have anything to do to talk about Taysom this week. Kyle Van Noy had a couple of tackles in I was about to say BYU's victory, the Patriots' victory over the Chiefs, which was an exciting game. I mean, obviously, as Patriots fans, we love it, and probably the rest of you are throwing up in your mouth, but. But it was if you were just a fan of football, that was an amazing back and forth there at the end. It was quite incredible.
I love it when the primetime games like that are good, right?
Fred Warner, another big game, played all 71 snaps on defense. He's seventh in the NFL in solo tackles. He's got 38 solo tackles, 12 assists, 3 tackles.
And he recovered a fumble on Sunday, if memory serves.
Recorded three solo. Maybe.
Or were they the Monday night game?
That was the week before.
Oh, okay.
That was the week before, I think. Jamal Williams, 6 rushes for 29 yards and had a 10-yard reception, but he did have a stiff arm of Sherman Williams.
You always like that.
No, Richard Williams. Did I say Sherman Williams?
You did. We all know who you were talking about.
Well, I was making fun of him anyway. But absolutely, absolutely destroyed Richard Sherman on that. So that's pretty amazing. That's about it for that update. Matt, let's talk about Hawaii.
Yeah.
So
how about that, huh?
Let's open it up with our first tweet bag question of the day.
Tweet bag.
This is off of Facebook. If you want to join, climb on in the tweet bag in Facebook, you can do that at facebook.com/riseandshout. Justin Whiting says, I admit it when I'm wrong. Well, that makes one of us, Justin.
That's big of you, Justin.
I don't. I thought moving Kafusi off the line was a terrible idea, but putting him in the middle was genius. What should they do with him the rest of the year? And Hadley played great at running back as well. Hashtag I was wrong. Hashtag face bag. Matt, I agreed with Justin when I saw they had moved him off the line. I thought they had lost their minds.
Yeah, I thought, oh, here we go. Like we have found a way to lose this.
Yeah.
But it worked. If you would have told me a week ago that we were going to use Kafusi that way, I would have slapped you, right?
So how much money did he make on Saturday?
I don't know. Like, do you think that does it for him? Do you
He's getting drafted now.
You really think that?
Late rounds, yes. He's too much of a physical specimen. If they keep using him this way, I think he'll be a late round draft pick. He's definitely a rookie free agent guy. Somebody's going to look at him and go, with his athleticism, his size, speed, that someone's going to take him. You know, and if you would have told me that last year, I thought he was a bust by the end of last year. I'm just like, he should have stuck with basketball, right? Like, not a bust. Like, he was a good, you know, he was a good contributor, solid contributor, but not what we all thought he could be, right? Based on his skill sets. But yeah, I mean, he looked great. I mean, I get it. It's Hawaii, so let's not.
Slow your roll here a little bit.
Yeah, let's not put him in Canton yet. But I think that versatility, like, that's a big deal in the NFL right now, right? Specialists, yeah, you got pass rushing specialists and stuff, but with the way
offenses, he's not a pass rushing specialist.
No, but the thing is, he can do a bunch of things.
That's the gold he brings to the table, right? Yeah. Is I may not be a pass rushing specialist guy, but I am a versatile player, and you can plug me in a variety of places, and I think I can put myself in a position to compete. And that's what he has to do. That's how he has to sell himself. Now, I don't know if that single game gets him there, and the unfortunate thing is I don't know that. I think it was an opportune time given the offense we were against and Cole McDaniel and what we believed they were going to do with Cole McDaniel, that they used Kafusi that way. I don't know that there's another offense where he gets used like this again. Yeah, but maybe they do something else with him that's a little bit different and can showcase his versatility that way.
I don't know. I could see it against Utah based on the changes they've made on offense over the past few weeks. I wouldn't be surprised. Okay. The other piece is we've had injuries at linebacker, right? And this is a good time to mention you and I. The news about Zane Anderson came out, I think, while we were recording last week or just shortly before, so we missed it. And, I feel terrible for him. He'd had a really good season. Talk about another personnel move that I thought was wrong, and Anderson and the coaching staff proved me wrong on that one. See, I can't admit when I'm wrong. Huh, look at that. There's a first for everything. But I feel really bad for him and that his season was lost. When he was such a key part of the team. And obviously Butch Powell continues to be in and out of the lineup with injuries, Matt. So from my perspective, in some ways this was a scheme thing. It was also just a lack of personnel thing, and putting, your best athletes on the field. Your best 11 has been their mantra. But let's talk about this defense in general. So we spent a lot of time bashing the defense last week. And by the way, Matt, I didn't put this in the thing, but we had on last week's podcast, we had a question that basically said, let me go back to it, that we have been bashing on players and we shouldn't bash on players. Did you see this?
Yeah, I did. I ignored it.
All right. So I will say this.
Admit that, but
I will say this. I don't think we've bashed on any players. I don't think we've attacked any players. Pointing out that somebody didn't play well is just facts, right? And it's not since you told Riley Nelson to take off his jersey and walk out of the locker room. We haven't really...
No, it was take off his jersey and go hide in the locker room.
Oh, sorry. Whatever. You know, something.
It was ridiculous and incorrect, but that's what I said.
But we don't trash players, right? Me saying that I don't think Micah Simon should play over Gunnar Romney. It's not trashing Simon.
And it's not personal.
It's never
like
personal.
The coaches make decisions like that all the time. It's not about bashing a player.
Yeah, yeah. And we're not coaches. We're not even media. We're just two fans talking about the game, and the games and the results. But let's get back to this defense. I'm impressed with what Tuiaki did. I'm not going to say that all is. I'm not nervous about the defense going forward, but this was a good offense, and we shut them down for a good chunk of that game and created pressure and moved players around and disguised the defense. This was, I felt like Tuiaki actually made some adjustments after what had been 2 weeks of pretty terrible defensive football.
I mean, what did we end up with Saturday night? 6 sacks when we had had 3 on the year up to that? I mean,
No, your numbers are all wrong. But yes, we had 4 sacks. We had had 6 coming into the year.
Yeah, whatever. So my numbers were like way off because I just pulled them out of thin air. But that's fine. That's fine. I'm not like a journalist.
Yeah,
I just
make
stuff up. But if you look at those numbers, even maybe we should look at the actual numbers instead of the ones I made up. But if you look at those numbers, that tells you that they did something different, right? Yes. Is Hawaii, Wisconsin? No, they're not.
Well, we blitzed, man.
To get 4 sacks in a game when you'd only had 6 the entire year up to that, I mean, you only get there by doing something different. You don't get there with continuing the same 3-man rush and these other types of things, right? So clearly some adjustments were made and they worked.
We I believe 3 of the 4 were on blitzes. I think only 1 came through. And even on the non-blitzes, we had they were running some stunts and a few things instead of just running straight up the field. So I felt like there was some adjustments. I will tell you this much. I love our defensive backfield. I think our defensive backfield is one of the best we've had in a long time. Like, we just don't hear their names in negative ways. And blown coverages are rare, especially deep. So I know we've harped on this defense a lot the last couple of weeks, and makes sense. They gave up a lot of yards and a lot of points. But there is – I look at this defensive backfield, and I say, when everybody's healthy, this is a good unit. And if I feel any different about the Boise State game – which we'll get to that here in a little bit. Some of it has to do with the quality of our defensive backfield play. What do you think of that there, buddy?
I can't disagree that the defensive backfield has not been the problem.
No. They really haven't.
I think the games where we've struggled defensively, it's been inability to get a good rush on the quarterback and to win in the trenches, right? But what's also interesting is the games where we've done well, if you look at the good defensive performances, the ones that stick out in my mind are Arizona, even though they were terrible, Wisconsin,
yes,
and this last weekend. If you look at those 3 games, the big difference, in at least from the eye test, was the defensive line play.
Yes, that's true.
To win at the line of scrimmage, get into the backfield, get some penetration, and either get either some type of a rush on a quarterback or contain the ball in behind the line of scrimmage, which is kind of what you were doing with against Wisconsin against the run, and against Arizona also with the run, and Khalil Tate, who was probably injured when we played him, right? But the difference, that's where the difference has been. When they aren't playing well, like, the rest of the defense is going to struggle because you can't cover guys forever back there, right?
No, you can't.
But the defensive backfield has not been the liability in any of those situations. Where we've struggled, it's been because the line play has been poor.
Yeah,
or you've got injuries in the linebacker core or some scheming issues, right? Those have been the problems. It's not been the defensive backfield.
And I've been impressed with Isaiah Kafusi in the last game and a half while he's been playing more. And you know, you remember he was really good in the spring game, not this last year, but the year before. Mm-hmm. And I thought he'd have more of a role last year, and he didn't. And due to injuries, he's stepping in. And he just reminds me of, like, a bunch of other linebackers we've had that are good size, decent speed, and just solid. You know what I mean? Like, and maybe he grows into more than that over time. But I just, watching him play, I'm like, he just reminds me of a BYU linebacker, right? Like a prototype, you know, a BYU linebacker. He's just, I think, you know, injuries are terrible. I'd rather have the starters and all those guys in, but it's good to be able to see the next guy step up and play well
and perform, right? That's the key, is to see that guy step in there and fill in the gap.
Yeah. And be ready to do that. So hats off to him. So anyway, enough about the defense. Nobody wants to talk about defense.
Defense.
So Daniel Smith on Facebook asks this, Where was Bo? I was scanning the sideline, didn't see him. He's hurt, right?
Yeah, he's hurt. I don't believe he practiced at all last week.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything about this week, but I mean, he's hurt with an undisclosed injury. We may not see him. He may not have suited up. I don't know. I didn't see him on the sidelines, but I wasn't scanning the sideline like Daniel Smith was looking for him. Just because I knew by the time we got to the game, I knew that he hadn't practiced all week and we weren't going to see him.
Well, and you had mentioned on the show last week that, you know, that he was hurt. So I don't know. I don't know what to do with that one. I thought Bo Hodge would, as we mentioned last week, be a bigger part of the offense this year, and due to whatever factors, he has not been.
What will be interesting is, you know, is a prolonged Bo Hodge absence is going to lead to people asking questions about, is he, you know, he hasn't burned a year yet.
It's true with the new
and
rules.
He could, that's right. He could just stop practicing now. And you know, if he stopped practicing now and transferred, could he start next year somewhere? Could he play next year?
It could be a grad transfer, I think, because I think he's close to graduation. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what goes with him.
Who knows what's going on there?
Let's talk about the running back play on Saturday. So you look at the running back play, Matt. What sticks out to you there? I mean, we've gone from at the beginning of the year, it was a run back, one back system with Squally Canada, to it was really three guys on Saturday. Yeah, Katoa got 16 touches, but Hadley and Riley Burt each got 9.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing here is the evolution in the philosophy of the run game is purely a product of injuries to Squally Canada.
Yeah.
And with a healthy Squally Canada, I don't think you see the ball getting spread out this much around running backs. While I'm excited about what we're seeing out of Katoa, Hadley, and Burt, we're only seeing this because Canada's hurt.
Well, we had a question later on that had, now I'm trying to find it, that had multiple facets to it, including Burt. I mean, including Hadley. But Hadley's, you know, switch back and forth. I mean, he's played two positions even this year, you know, and the announcers pointed that out during the game. I mean, he looked good. Now, this isn't a good defense. So you know, and we'll talk about that, you know, that they're not a good defense quite a bit in this podcast. But, I mean, he looked good. He was cutting. And then Katoa was making some of these jump cuts and different things. And then Riley Burt, I mean, he's just a sprinter, right? Like, he literally, right? I mean, he was a really good track star. But I don't see him making cuts. But if the hole's there, the guy can run, right?
Yeah, so, he's gone.
So, I mean, and we had all of them had at least a 16-yard run. When the week before, I think our longest run was like against Utah State was, I don't know, like 7 or something stupid like that.
If you don't include Zach Wilson.
That's what I mean. Until Wilson's run there in the fourth quarter, it was our running backs, you know, couldn't get a break. Now, that's offensive line play. That's them. That's, you know, a lot of things. But anyway, so Matt, let's get on to the important issue from Saturday night and the announcing team. And this is from Keith Smith. The announcers really seem to love the Cougar Tails, Keith says. Act of devouring a cougar tail live on air increase our chances of getting an SEC team to visit Provo in the future? Does the rest of the country love sugar as much as we do? Hashtag facebag, hashtag LDS sugar rush, hashtag caffeine on campus. I don't know, Keith, why you threw in caffeine. I don't understand.
Because we've all been waiting for it. He just got excited. The sugar rush got to him.
Because the Cougar Tails, are they also laced with caffeine? They could be.
If they're not, they should be. But does it increase? If there's one thing the SEC does love, other than drinking early on game day,
it's
sugar. I think something like the Cougar Tails right up their alley. Unfortunately, I don't know if that actually is increasing the chances of us getting an SEC team.
I don't think it will. But I will tell you what,
it increases the odds of me coming to a game in Provo sometime soon, because I love a good maple bar. Who doesn't want to eat one that's 16 inches long?
I couldn't finish it. I had to split it with our nephew. I couldn't.
Come on.
I'm a lightweight now. Well, I don't run like 80 miles a week like you do. So if I eat a 16-inch one, that's going straight to you know where. So
Straight to Tummy Town?
That's right. Straight to Tummy Town.
Straight to the dad bod?
I was going to say my butt, but sure. Yeah. Either way. Doesn't matter. Somewhere. So Matt, let's talk not about Cougar Tales really, but I really enjoyed the announcing team. I like Adam, what's his face, and the color guy was good. I thought they did an actually really good job. And I'm highly critical of announcing teams, the ESPN, you know, second and third tier announcing teams who don't seem to ever prepare. Or if you're Mac Brown either, he doesn't prepare either.
No, Mac Brown mails it in because he's Mac Brown, right? The rest of the guys just don't have time to prepare appropriately because it's their side gig. Well, then, but yeah, I liked the...
Are you giving them a pass on not preparing to do their job well? I'm not giving them a pass.
I'm just saying that's the reality of it, right? Is that they wait till the last minute to do it. And
They have to say Dylan Collier?
Okay, he didn't actually say Dylan Collier. Or Talon Chumois. We made those up.
No, he said Dylan. He said Dylan Collie 2 weeks ago.
Okay, Dylan. Yeah, but that's not a prep issue. I feel like that's like a not being able to read good problem, right? Like, who looks at that name and decides that that's how it's pronounced?
Well, Dylan is like such a common name in the US right now. So anyway.
That one, I think that's a bad example, but... Yeah, I'm with you. They were good announcers. I thought they did a good job. It didn't, but I wonder if we did a study on this, are we less likely to be critical of the announcers when our team is winning?
In a blowout,
announcers get stuck having to talk about garbage stuff, trying to fill the time, or trying to say stupid stuff to keep the fans interested so they don't change the channel or turn the game off. And I think that backs them into a bad position. And we've had a couple of games where I feel like announcers have gotten into that space early.
Yes. And in this case, luckily, yeah. But I'll tell you what, I like Adam Amin. I like him all the time, right?
Oh, Amin's great. Amin's great. I'd love to see him on every BYU game.
Yeah,
he's great.
So, and dare I say this, I'd rather have him than McCann. Is that bad? Does that make me a bad BYU fan?
No.
Oh, okay, good. I think he's good, and he prepares. I mean, he's solid, right? And I think he gets that on these, you know, second tier games, right? And I'm not knocking BYU, but BYU Hawaii is not one that people are scheduling their week around outside of BYU and Hawaii fans, right? He gets that you're talking mostly to either hardcore college football fans, right? Because casual fans aren't watching this game, or fans of the two teams, right? And I think you have to like play to that, right? You have to play to, this is a hardcore college football fan. I thought the whole production team at ESPN did a good job of, you know, of doing that. The whole Cougar Tail thing is part of that, right? You know, because it makes you feel like you're at the game. If you're a hardcore fan, you've never been to Provo, and they've got this massive maple bar.
Yeah, what's the food? It's like the thing they used to do with Blackledge, where he'd go and eat whatever the signature meal was, right? Yeah, you've got to do some of that. You've got to bring the stadium experience to the people in their homes. And I'm with you. People that are hardcore football fans, that are the people other than BYU or Hawaii fans watching that game, that's the type of stuff that they kind of grew up on and want to see.
Yeah. Now, I did think they missed the opportunity to make fun of that ref. Now, I couldn't.
That was weird.
There's zero. If I had been announcing that game, I would have had to have made fun of him the rest of the game. Facing the wrong way for an entire half is just awesome.
Hey, we're up here. Up here, fellas.
Here's the craziest part. Did you recognize that guy?
Yeah, he's reffed in LES before.
A bunch of times. He's reffed. And the press box, it's the big one, dude. It's the big one.
Yeah, forget the big one. There is nothing on top of the stands in the direction he was looking. It's just the mountains. There's nothing up there. And it's not like you can't see it in the dark. I mean, there are lights up there. I mean, that is so bizarre. Like,
it was the weirdest thing.
Making that mistake one time, okay, maybe. Maybe, right?
But like 16
times?
Have you ever seen it one time?
Have I ever been in that stadium and not known where the press box was? Is that the question you're asking me? No, not a single time have I ever been in that stadium and been like, which way am I facing?
Which way are the mountains?
If the mountains are east, That means the press box is over. Oh, there it is. It's not hard to find, fella.
It's pretty big. Well, those refs did not have a banner night, right? let's just put it in general. I don't mean they were like a prejudice against BYU at all. I just think that wasn't the best.
I feel like there could have been a great blooper video with the song like boop 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 with him like turning around trying to figure out which way he's facing
or calling a false start when the team had yet to get set.
That was good. Almost clotheslining a guy. Those are great shots.
I don't understand the false start. Now, illegal substitution potentially. I mean, there are calls that happen at that point before you line up, but I've never seen a false start called. Like, I guess if he crossed the line of scrimmage, they didn't show the replay, but you know, they hadn't set yet. Can you false start before you set? I think that's like the definition, right? You have to set and then you move. That's the whole point, right?
Or it's a false start on all 11 guys.
Yeah. They were all moving. They were trying to get set too late. Anyway, Jeremy Ashton via email, and if you want to join the tweet bag via email, you can do that at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. How much of BYU's offensive success should be attributed to Wilson? Here we are 30 minutes in, and we haven't even talked about Zach Wilson. I'm proud of us. How much should be attributed to Wilson versus Hawaii's defense? It felt to me that they were able to move the ball better against Hawaii than we have for at least 2 years, including both wins over FCS opponents. Maybe it is too early to celebrate too much, but I'm trying not to look back and ask, what if Wilson had started against California? Yeah, don't do that, Jeremy. You'll just drive yourself nuts. So, Matt, let's talk about Zach Wilson.
Zach Wilson. Hey there, fella.
Yeah, Zach Wilson. So
welcome to the big league.
So let's look at yards per pass attempt. It's my favorite stat.
It's a great stat, and in this case, it's going to tell us an important story.
Okay, so what is the... Over the last 2 years of this terrible offense, how many times have we gone over 8 yards per pass attempt for a game?
Oh, I don't know.
This is the second time in the past 2 years. And if you take that back 3 years, it's only the fourth time in the Kalani wow. Sitake era. Okay, now wow. 8's an arbitrary line. There's a couple of 7s in there. The other time was last year against San Jose State.
Yeah, they're not good.
And that was a 332-yard passing day for – that was Critchlow at that point, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was.
That was Critchlow slinging the ball back then. And San Jose State was, of course, was terrible. And, you know, you look at that and you say, okay, so what is the defining factor over those 4 games where we've been over 8? Toledo? Southern Utah, San Jose State, and now Hawaii. What's the defining factor there, Matt?
None of those teams are any good.
All of them are terrible. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I don't want to rain on the parade of Zach Wilson. I thought he played well, and we're going to talk about why we think it was better. We looked better throwing the football than we did against McNeese State. Or at any other point this year, even against teams that were not good against the pass, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of good here, but Hawaii's pass defense was one of the worst, if not the worst, pass defense in the country coming into this game, and I don't care about the 194 yards. We had another question. Let me go to it. Should we be worried? Because of this, because he didn't even get 200 yards. I wouldn't be worried about the total number of yards at all.
No, I'm not worried about that.
So Joel Everett via email says, hi guys, long time listener, first time tweet bagger. Hey,
welcome
to the tweet bag.
Oh, that's great. Love it when we get people in the tweet bag for the first time.
Yeah. Especially guys
for the very
Joel.
First time.
Yeah. Especially a guy's named Joel. It's just a solid name, right?
It is. It's a very solid name.
Very solid name. Do you think Zach Wilson really is better than Tanner Mangum, or was Hawaii's defense just terrible? Matt?
B- both of these things can be true.
Yes.
Hawaii's defense can be terrible, and it can still show us that Zach Wilson was better than is better than Tanner Mangum. And I am in the camp of both of these things are true. Right? I mean, if you go and you look, you know, you look at the what the passing performances looked like for most of the year up till this point, and you look at, you know, is Hawaii worse than McNeese State? Right? No, right? So there are some
well, their pass defense, technically, actually, to be fair, their pass defense may be worse, but it's probably fairly comparable. Okay.
So, but my point is, both of the things, these aren't mutually exclusive, right? No, is that the term? Is that both of these things can be true, and they are. I think Zach Wilson is better. Am I ready to, like, really cast my Heisman ballot for Zach Wilson? Am I ready to say that he's going to lead us to the promised land? We're going to win out the rest of the season? Have I changed my opinion on the outcome of any of the games, the rest of our schedule? I guess we'll get to that in a minute. But I do think this is one game. It is a data point. But I believe it's enough to tell us. I think that Tanner Mangum could not have duplicated that performance, and the offense would not have performed as well had Tanner been in the game.
I still think we win, but I agree with you. I agree with you. And Zach Thornton, that's at Coronado Zach on Twitter. And you, this is our first Twitter tweet bag. You can tweet at us at BYU_RushUp. How do we help our fellow fans not act as if Zach Wilson is the second coming of Steve Young? You can't, Zach. You can't.
No, you just got to let him do it.
You can't stop it.
And you don't want to be that guy. That's like the, well, this is just one. I know, and then I just said this is just one game. But you don't want to be the guy like telling everybody to slow their roll. Listen, it's been a long couple of years, and we had a quarterback look pretty good Saturday night. Let's just enjoy that.
Yeah.
There's no need to throw a wet towel on it.
Yeah, so I'm going to throw
just
a wet towel
on it. Just let it ride, Zach. I'm
going to be that guy for a second.
Why are you that guy?
Okay, so here's two things that were very concerning to me. Both of the first one is very fixable. The second one may not be. Okay.
Two things that were very concerning to me. All right, go ahead. Right. Wet towel.
What's with the nasal voice?
What's with the stick
bad.
In the mud?
Yeah,
go ahead.
What's with your face? All right, so here's the thing. The first one is the running out of bounds instead of throwing it away. It's going to drive me nuts, man.
That's a freshman mistake.
Occasionally, that's the right decision, to be fair, right? Sometimes you don't have the right angle. The guy's right there in your face. It's better to just step and take the sack, right? The 3-yard loss. Okay, gotcha. There were a couple times where he could have easily thrown the ball away, okay, instead of taking a loss. Okay.
Yes.
The second one is in back-to-back plays. I mean, he throws the interception the second time. It should have been an interception the first time. You know, this falling in love with your arm, you know, we have seen quarterbacks. This is a fine line, right? If you're successful, you're Brett Favre, or in BYU, you're Max Hall, right?
Right. Max Hall towed this line very well.
Well, except there were some games he didn't, though, right?
Right, but that's the price you pay.
Yeah,
life is all about trade-off.
That's the price
you
pay.
And you want a guy who's got the confidence in himself, which is the term I'll use. You want a guy who has the intestinal fortitude to try and get that ball in there sometimes.
Yes.
Like, I think you want that guy. I'd rather have a quarterback that's overconfident than somebody who's gun-shy.
Yes, I agree with everything you said. But the flip side to this is you become a quarterback that nobody remembers because you throw too many stinking interceptions and they replace you, right? Right. I mean, that's the bad side of this, right? You disappear because eventually you can't throw 3 or 4 interceptions a game. Now, he didn't throw 3 or 4 interceptions. He threw one. But I think there were a couple other throws in there against better pass defenses, better defensive backs, better schemes.
Yeah, he had one or maybe two that were complete luck, but they weren't.
This was a 3-interception game that just happened to be a 1-interception game, right? So I think that's my biggest concern with Zach Wilson. He is competitive. He can run. He can throw the ball far, right? Like, he can make a lot of the throws. He's a little small, right? And that's, but I don't really care about that. I mean, that I worry a little bit how many hits he's going to be able to take. But he took
the
couple
and
popped right up.
He got popped a couple times and jumped right back up. And just shook it off. I mean, I don't think he's the type of guy who's going to get hit once or twice and then decide he's afraid of anybody in the other jersey.
Yeah. Yeah, so
which we've seen before.
Randy Whittle on Facebook says, "I can't help but feel bad for Tanner Mangum, who has arguably had the biggest roller coaster ride of any BYU QB. Even though the season isn't over and Tanner could be back, when it's all said and done, how will we view his term as a BYU quarterback? Success or failure?" Matt, I'm going to say this. It can't be success when you came in as a five-star recruit and you end your career not starting. Not because of injury, but because of ineffectiveness. I'm not going to say failure seems too harsh because he's had some really good moments and he was the starter for an extended period of time, but I can't say that this is probably the way Tanner had envisioned it when he signed to play at BYU.
No, I don't think anybody envisioned it this way when he signed to play at BYU. I mean, if he had signed at BYU and say he's going to be average, right? I mean, you probably could have sold some people on that. I might have bought that, right? But
below average?
Below average and have it shake out this way and he gets benched as a senior for a true freshman?
For a true freshman whose pedigree, like from a recruiting standpoint, isn't anywhere near Mangum's, right? Wilson was not that type of recruit. I mean, solid recruit. I'm not bagging on him. I'm just saying Mangum was in that Elite Eight group, right? He was hanging with Jameis Winston, stealing crabs, you know? Hopefully he wasn't stealing.
I don't think he was stealing crabs. I think that happened at a Publix in Florida. But but I think when I think about Tanner Mangum at this point, and it's hard, right? You can't – it's hard to try and write somebody's legacy when the season isn't over yet. But when you look at Tanner Mangum, like I'm with you. I don't know that I would say failure here just because think about some of the memories and highs we have with Tanner Mangum, right? Coming in with the injury in the Nebraska game and the Hail Mary, the Boise State win, you know, and then you look at like battling back from the injury and, you know, an injury that ends careers.
Right.
And coming back and getting the starting job to start the season off. I mean, so there have been some big wins and a lot of positive things about Tanner Mangum. This season has not panned out. I don't think he's put himself in a position to go, you know, to go to the next level.
Which we all at the beginning, do you remember this? Where people were so mad when he played as a freshman.
Right, because now he's going
to
go.
Now he's going to leave the NFL. And I always find that argument to be so stupid. Right? Like guys, you know, let's not put guys, how many BYU quarterbacks have left early for the NFL, right?
How many have done that and it was a terrible idea, right?
Only one of them. We've only had one.
And it was a terrible idea.
It was the worst. Yeah, Walsh, that was terrible. So anyway.
So, but I think there's enough positive about Tanner Mangum and his story here that I don't think you could say that you look back on him as a failure. I mean, he came in and bailed us out. He came in and filled in for an injured Taysom Hill, battled back from an injury. I mean, he's done some things. Now, how that stands the test of time 10 years from now when people think about his time, I mean, is this a guy that's going to be listed as top 10 quarterbacks of all time at BYU?
Nope.
No.
Nope.
No, he won't.
Nope.
But that doesn't make him a failure.
But
right?
He will
he's
be
higher
on
the list than I am.
Yeah, well, yeah, sure. Yeah, everyone's higher on the list than you. But there will be moments, right? You mentioned Boise State, Nebraska, even the Wisconsin win this year. He was the quarterback. Yeah, I mean, he didn't, you know, set the world on fire, but he had a decent game.
He did exactly what they asked him to do to win that game.
So I think, no, he won't be in the top BYU quarterbacks, but there will be some games that are considered some of the best BYU wins of the last 20 years, where he will have quarterbacked three of them.
And you got to also remember, this is the guy who was the freshman of the year, right? He won that the freshman of the year award.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't a quarterback who is soon forgotten, even if he doesn't start another game for BYU. And remember, guys, we've got a lot of football left to play here. I mean, Zach Wilson could become a dumpster fire in the next 2 or 3 weeks, right? So, you know,
that's really
I'm just saying, you just don't know, right? Like, look what happened at Alabama, right? You know, somebody, you're one sprained knee away from Tanner Mangum being your starting quarterback.
Well, but stop it right there. Stop it right there, because Kalani Sitake said something very interesting this week when asked about who the backup was. Did you read that quote?
I don't think I did.
He said, "I don't know. I guess we'll see when it comes out. Jalen Hall has been playing really well in practice."
Yeah, and Critchlow is the quarterback of the future.
Stop for a second. Here's the thing. I don't think Mangum comes back in. I don't think we see Mangum anymore. I think if they get addicted to a mobile quarterback, I don't think they're going back to Mangum. I know Grimes said he's not changing the system or whatever else. Yeah, right.
Yeah,
I
mean, that's baloney. We all watched a couple it. Of we all saw it. I mean, yeah, you can say whatever you want, runs, but that was like, not the same offensive scheme. Like, come on. The philosophy was not the same.
Yeah, so all I'm saying is that I think there's a possibility that I wouldn't have even believed this a week ago, but Kalani's he's not really a smokescreen guy. Right? Like, the quote you're talking about is Ed Lamb, right?
Yeah, but Ed Lamb at the direction of Kalani Sitake.
You're not going to convince Critchlow to SUU.
That wasn't all calculated.
You've got this conspiracy theory thing. I don't know that I believe quite as much as you about Lamb's comments. I'm just saying, like, Critchlow is his guy.
Way out the door, hey, Ed, make sure while you're down there.
Critchlow's his guy. Is Ed Lamb's guy, right? Like, So he's going to talk him up. Kalani Sitake, here's the thing. Who recruited Jalen Hall and Zach Wilson? Well, I guess Hall, was it Sitake?
Grimes.
No, it was Sitake. Well, I guess Hall might not have been Sitake. Did he sign
it? Yeah, I have to go back. I think he was before
his mission. Hmm. But Zach Wilson, right, was recruited by Sitake, right? He originally signed to play at Boise State, right?
Yep.
So, this goes right into this next question that we have about the rest of the season. So Chris Murphy on Twitter at CMurphyPro says, do you think the coaches are going with younger players the second half of the season in part is to prepare for the tough schedule next year? Matt, what do you think about that? I know how much you love preparing for next year.
I don't think that's what they're doing. I think it's a byproduct of what they're doing. And you listen to Grimes, at least publicly, he's saying the same thing. He and I are very much on the same page here, right? You put the best players on the field to put you in a position to win the game that's in front of you. And I think offensively, they've gone back to the drawing board and said, who wants to play? Like, who's going to go out here and give us a shot at winning? Who's going to execute? Who's going to run hard? Who's going to block? You know, who's going to catch the football when it hits them in the hands? And those are the guys they're putting on the field, with the exception of, you know, one walk-on freshman who I'm not sold on why he
Dax
sees
Mill.
The field like he does. Yeah, I don't see it. But
hey, he's had almost the same amount of snaps this year as Gunnar Romney. Makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, I don't see that one. But like Gunnar Romney is clearly a guy who's looks like he may be ready to break out, right? And when you've had a little bit of injury issue with your pass catchers, and I said that like it's a position, right? But you've had a little bit of an injury issue, so you've got some depth stuff you're combating against, and you've had people with a bad case of the dropsies, and so you put a guy in who looks like he's ready to play. So I think that's really what we're seeing at this point, is that these are the guys that the coaching staff feels like give them the best chance to win. And let's be honest here, going back to the point you made a minute ago, these are the guys that this staff recruited.
Here's the thing. Everybody loves their own guys, right? And in Sitake's case, he may have recruited and wanted some of these folks when he was at his last two stops, right? So some of them may feel like his guys because he wanted them at Utah or Oregon State, right? But in reality, right, these are the guys that they signed. So, you know, there is always going to be that bias of put these guys in. And right now it seems to be working pretty well. But Brandon Gurney pointed this out, friend of the podcast, Brandon Gurney, during the game on Twitter, is that we're getting a bunch of true freshmen playing this year, which is not a BYU thing typically, right? Because the missions and all that stuff. But here's the other part. This was not a touted, like, high recruiting class. And you've got this walk-on Dax Milne playing. Maybe we think he should be playing less. Zach Wilson starting at quarterback. Gunnar Romney, an offensive lineman. You know, a couple guys on defense that just walked in off of high school or transfers or something like that. And you look at all these first-year guys for the BYU program, and you think, wow. You know, and we have our best, probably most complete game of the year, at least offensively, not maybe totally, because obviously that Wisconsin game, I'm going to give us a little bit more credit for winning in Madison than beating a bad Hawaii team in Provo, with a lot of freshmen playing. And I think that's a good sign for next year. I don't think they're doing it to prepare for next year. I agree with you, but it makes me feel good that we had an improved game over the last 2 weeks and a ton of freshmen and sophomores were involved.
It's certainly not bad.
Yeah. So CougFan82 on Twitter says, did you see anything Saturday against Hawaii that changes how you view BYU's chances for wins against Boise or Utah? So Matt, Boise or Utah, those are the two biggest games remaining on the schedule, obviously. What are our chances against Boise? I think our chances are decent against Boise, to be honest. I don't think they're that great. The wheels seem to be coming off for them. It'll be interesting to see where they're at in a couple weeks when we play them. Utah looks really good now that their offense is not terrible. For me, the answer is no. I think we lose to both of them. But I think Boise, maybe.
We lose both those games.
But I think the Boise thing also has to do with them, right? Not just how we looked on. The other thing will be, do we go out and dominate Northern Illinois in a week and a half or not? Right? Because Northern Illinois is looking decent, looking a little better than they had earlier in the season. So my question will be, if they dominate them, then I might feel different about that Boise game. I might be tempted to pick the Cougars. But we got
to
do it twice.
I don't know. We'd have to really dominate Northern Illinois to put me in a position to change my. I feel like you've broken my heart before, right? This season already. I'm not gonna buy it. I'm not going to buy the hype this time.
You're not gonna buy the hype yet. That's fair. So Gary Payne on Twitter, that's at FastBreakGP, said, "I just arrived in my DeLorean, powered by Cold Fusion from 1985. So we scored 49 points against Hawaii. Big deal. Seriously though." Implications for the balance of the season, and dare I say future seasons from this game. Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag painbag. Matt, let's look into our crystal ball to next year and beyond.
Let's just get the DeLorean and go there.
Is Zach Wilson the starter? Is he a three-year starter after this point?
Yep. Well, this year counts as year one?
No.
No.
Why not?
Because if he starts the next 2 years, because he looks like he did Saturday night, he'll leave.
No, he's not. Stop it. He's not going anywhere.
He and Walsh are going straight to the NFL.
He's not going anywhere. He's not going to be a 3.5-year starter for two reasons. Number one, we have some pretty highly recruited guys coming to play quarterback here in the next while, and he's going to get challenged. But the second one is, it's really rare nowadays. People get hurt. You know, we saw it with Taysom. We saw it with Tanner. The chances of him starting every game between now and the end of his career is so small, right? It just is. I mean, I hope for his sake that he can stay healthy and effective over that time. But, you know, look at Mangum. He beats Wisconsin, and 2 weeks later, he's not the starter, right? Like, this game is brutal, insane. Man. It's brutal.
That's insane.
And it was the right decision, right? We're not saying it was the wrong decision, but it's
no,
brutal.
But it's crazy. But if you go back, if you take the DeLorean back to the Wisconsin game and you say, hey, look, guys, like, I know we're all feeling really good about this win, but a couple weeks from now, you're going to bench Tanner Mangum and feel good about it.
I was saying that. I might have said that next podcast.
I would have bought that at the time, right? What did he have, like 90 passing yards in that game or something?
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. But you're right. I mean, to start all those games is rare and difficult.
So, all right, Justin Sweeney.
Especially if you go to the NFL early.
He's not going to the NFL. Stop that garbage. He's not going to the NFL.
With the first pick in the NFL draft.
Oh, gosh. So, Justin Sweeney.
Sweeney.
At Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter says, he borrowed Gary's DeLorean and visited December 1st, 2018. So
he borrowed the DeLorean the way Biff did, right? Like, he didn't get permission.
He didn't get permission.
He went to visit 12-1-2018 so that he could bet on the games between now and then. That's what Sweeney just did.
That's good job. Good job, Sweeney. He says, we are 8-4. The Cougars are 8-4. Just beat Utah and headed to the Independence Bowl to play Bronco and the University of Virginia. Ranked this season among other memorable ones. Well, it'd certainly be the most memorable season of Kalani's era.
Yes. Yes, it would. And the bowl game against Bronco would only be really memorable if we showed up in jerseys that said Tradition, Spirit, and Honor on the back. Yes! Yes!
Yes, have to. Have to. Have to do that. Have to do it. Anyway.
I've been waiting to make that comment since I read this question.
It would be a fascinating – here's the thing. It would be absolutely fascinating season to think about, okay? Because you think about it this way. We lose to California and Utah State at home. Two teams that, quite frankly, we should have beat both of them. And Utah State less maybe than California because Utah State's a better team this year than California is. But, you know, two games we should have won, right? But – If this were to play out, you beat Utah in a season which they may be a top 25 team, okay? Mm-hmm. And you beat Wisconsin, who maybe they aren't as good as we thought they were.
But they're a top 20 team.
But they're a top 20 team, okay? So you beat two top 20 teams, which there are very few seasons in BYU history where we beat two top 25 teams, right? There's a few, but not a ton. So you think, well, it could be one of the most memorable. But you have these terrible losses, maybe, again, and a loss to Boise State, and that absolutely drumming, you know, losing to Utah State and then Washington the week before, the way you lost. I don't know where you put this season. If it were to play out that way, I don't know where you put it, man. Like, yeah, Wisconsin is one of the coolest victories we've ever had, and then the Utah game would be awesome, but I don't know where you put this season.
It's like you've got this game, you've got this season that kind of has these bookends of these two great wins, and then just like this total mess in between the two, right? It's a weird one, and I have a hard time getting super excited about an 8-win season, even with the win over Wisconsin and a assumed win over Utah.
Well, if you ended up getting to 9, say you beat Bronco and his Cavaliers.
The Fighting Mendenhalls?
Yeah, the Fighting Mendenhalls. I think it's still kind of a special season. Not like a top 5 season or something, but I think it's interesting. Anyway,
it's one we're talking about for a long time, and a lot of that will be around some of the storylines, right?
Yeah.
The win against Wisconsin, the struggles, the win against the coming back after everybody thought the season was in the tank and beating Utah, and then the rematch with Bronco, which they would have some cool components to it. Yeah. And I'm really just joking with all my Bronco talk tonight. I'm not trying to talk trash on Bronco Mendenhall, but
yeah, well, you thought we should fire him, so
just having a little bit of fun with it.
Good luck. That's worked out. So, Matt, we're going to skip a couple of these tweet bag questions. We're out of time. I feel like we haven't talked about anything. Like, we've been talking for an hour, and I feel like we've just kind of, like, talked. Hopefully this was enjoyable. Is this kind of what we do?
Yeah.
So, Matt, let's talk about...
You listen to the podcast, right?
That's true. And we haven't got a lot of new listeners the last couple of weeks, I don't think, after how terrible, you know... some of these
like it is after the Wisconsin game or something like
all
that.
All right. So Matt, here are some bowl.
Except we got that one guy, Joel Everett. Yeah. First time tweet bagger.
Thanks, Joel. So Matt, here are some bowl projections. You give me thumbs up or thumbs down on these bowl projections.
So this is thumbs up as in I think this is possible, or thumbs up as in I would like
you
this
want
matchup.
It. Who cares about if it's possible?
I want
it's
Bam.
It's all very, very early speculation at this point.
I want Bama. No, I don't want Bama.
No, you don't. You thought Washington was bad. All right, ESPN.com's Mitch Sherman predicts we'll be in the DXL Frisco Bowl versus Eastern Michigan. Matt, thumbs up or thumbs down?
Thumbs down.
Thumbs down. Who the freak wants to play in that bowl, first of all? And who wants to play against Eastern Michigan?
Yeah, at the directional schools. I just, meh.
All right. ESPN.com's Kyle Bungura, I'm sure I'm saying that wrong, walk-on Independence Bowl versus Arizona State.
Thumbs up.
Yes! Yes, another Pac-12 team will have played like the entire Pac-12. Or how many teams do they have now? 15?
And I love me some walk-ons. I'm not going to lie to you.
So no, how about this? Herm Edwards. I just want him to be in the press conference.
You play to win the game.
That's right. SI.com's Eric Single says Frisco Bowl, but against Cincinnati. I like the opponent, still don't like the game.
Well, I'll do a thumbs up. Cincinnati.
Thumb up to Suns.
Because I think that's a winnable game.
Hey, and the entire week before, we're talking about Bears and Cats mating.
Which would be great.
It would be fantastic. It would be fantastic.
You're the one who brought it up.
That's right. CBSSports.com's Jerry Palm says the Cheez-It Bowl. I didn't know that was a thing. That's amazing. I hope we get into the Cheez-It Bowl.
Did you know? Well, our logo is on the back of the Cheez-Its box right now.
I did not know that.
They've got like a college football something, and there's like 15 schools on there, and we're one of them. There's some tie in there.
Who knew? I don't know. All right. Against Mike Leach. And Washington State.
Yes. Thumbs up.
Yes. Yes. And then, of course, there's the projection. Steve, that's Cougar, Coug Keeter on Twitter, says it's still premature, but some projections show BYU versus Virginia in the Independence Bowl. Would you be in favor of that matchup? Hashtag tweetback. Hashtag climb on in. The answer is yes. Yes. And the Independence Bowl.
But I don't want to be in favor of that matchup. I don't want the Bronco Mendenhall rematch.
Why?
Because if we lose to Bronco Mendenhall, it will be so weird.
Here's the thing. If we lose to Bronco Mendenhall, and maybe this has already been kind of shown. We talked about this last week. Broncos teams were mostly built on defense. The defense was almost always, except for a few exceptions, when the team was actually some of the best teams he had, where they had really good offenses. The teams were built on defense, right? And we now have seen what can happen when Bronco's not here.
When you stop playing defense?
Well, no, we've really stopped playing offense. Tuiaki's defenses have not been great, but they haven't been. I haven't been the offense, man. Though to be fair, the offense took a big step forward this year. But here's a piece of news, Matt. Tell me your reaction to this before we close. Boise State's head coach in his new contract negotiations, he is so that's Brian Harsons? Why can't I ever remember his last name? He gets a bonus, apparently, $10,000. If he beats BYU and Boise, and $15,000 if he beats him in Provo.
I did not know this.
Harson, that's his last name.
That is awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And he doesn't get any bonuses for beating any Mountain West Conference foe. He does get $25,000 for beating any P5 school. So, I think, apparently we are a rival. And they mentioned in this article, Vanquish the Foe does, that you know, they listed internally, BYU listed Utah State and Boise State as the rivalry games for the year. And depressingly, we'll probably be 0-3 in those games. So, Matt, we're going to close with this. We're going to close with some national college football. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Now, instead of us ranking our top four, we'll come back to that at some other point. I want you to tell me one word. Contender or pretender? And I'm going to give you seven or eight names. And we're not going to say Alabama or Clemson or Ohio State because those three are clearly all contenders, right?
Yeah, two out of three of them.
Not Clemson? Clemson's a pretender? They're a contender. Come on, dude.
I'm just messing with you, but that's interesting that's the one of the three that you picked. I was just being stupid.
Yeah. All right. Contender or pretender, Notre Dame?
Contender.
I'm just gave you a softball. Contender or pretender, Michigan?
pretender?
I'm going to say contender. I'm going to say contender because they have a shot. If they beat Ohio State and they're the one loss champ of the Big Ten, I think they're in. So I think they're a contender.
I think they are. Oh, okay, yeah. Then I'm going to say contender. So if you're saying, do I think they have a legit shot at getting into the four?
Contender.
Contender. Michigan's got a path. Yeah, absolutely.
Legit shot. Okay. Texas. Contender. Pretender. I say pretender, too. What about Florida?
Pretender.
Pretender. Where are they? Central Florida.
Pretender, unfortunately.
Okay. How about anybody from the Pac-12?
They're all pretenders.
I don't think they have a shot.
No, they're not sending a team.
All right. Anybody from the Big 12 not named Oklahoma or Texas? So I guess West Virginia.
Pretender.
What about anybody from the ACC not named Clemson? What about NC State? Undefeated North Carolina State.
Yeah, no.
So, pretender. Man, we're really looking like, I mean, this could very easily play out to be Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Notre Dame, which is the same group you've been saying, I think, since week two or week three.
Right? I think it might have been my first week.
I thought you put Notre Dame in the second time we did it.
No, I definitely have had Notre Dame in from
the
beginning.
Was it Clemson or was it Ohio State? One of those. I thought, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you have been right the whole time.
I don't think I've changed my four.
I have changed
interesting
my four.
That they're now the top four ranked teams, but you know.
Yeah, it's interesting. Do you, I mean, if you had to give, obviously Alabama, hands down, if you had to say who's the second most likely team to make the playoffs, who is it?
Notre Dame.
I think it's Notre Dame now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think their path is just easier. Ohio State's still got to beat Michigan and then win the Big Ten game. And heck, there's a couple of weird games like the game on the road to at Purdue on Saturday.
That's right. That could be a little bit of a wild card.
But Purdue's offense is good enough that something weird could happen at the end of that game. And then Clemson's probably got a better shot than Ohio State, I think, just because their path is easier. They're not as good of a team, though.
No, I think Michigan has a very real shot at getting in those top four. I would almost change my four and put Michigan in it. That's going to be a very close game when those two get together, and it's going to be the winner. It's going to be the winner of that game that's going to determine who goes.
Well, but here's the thing: there is a bad scenario out there for the Big Ten if one of them does not win that Big Ten championship game.
Yeah, that's not good.
Now, it still could. Their winner could still get in, or they could do the thing where the loser gets in. Like, if Ohio State loses that championship game, but it's their only loss, and they lose to somebody with two losses, you know? I don't know. We'll see. What about?
Yeah, all of a sudden, LSU's in the...
What about a second SEC team? A Georgia, a Florida, LSU, after their big win? Is this the year where we get a second SEC team into the top four?
Maybe.
I think it's very possible. I mean, if Clemson stumbles or Notre Dame, you know, they had a little scare this weekend against Pitt.
You get a bad scenario for the ACC, and then that like perfect storm in the Big Ten. You know, there are people out there that believe that's the formula for UCF to get in, but I think there's a couple other places you go before you get
UCF's not
UCF's in. The team that gets in. Maybe it's another SEC team.
I mean, there's no way. There's
LSU
no way.
LSU will have two losses though, so that
with even with two losses, LSU gets in over UCF. I mean, they knocked out one loss Big 12 champs haven't made it. And you're gonna tell me an undefeated terrible schedule UCF gets in? No way.
Yeah, it's just not going to do
it. They're just not going to do it. And like I said last year, I would love to see them put UCF in because I would have loved to see that team have a shot at the big boys because I think they were good enough. And they proved it in the bowl game, right? that they were legit.
They're the national champs.
They're the national champs. That's right. Well, anyway, Matt, next week's going to be weird. I'm traveling. We may or may not have a show, so just let people know about that. And if we do, it might be a little different because I'm not going to be, you know, somewhere where I can record a podcast easily with you. Our time zone's going to be a little different.
That's going to get weird.
Yeah, it is going to get weird. But anyway, we will be – and no halftime show this weekend. So I feel like we should just pick a time on Saturday and just do a Facebook Live. I'm just kidding. We're not going to do that. But the halftime shows, we'll have one against Northern Illinois here in a week and a half. Come join us. We're having a blast. We're getting, you know, 70, 80, 90 people watching live. And people participating and giving us questions, it's a blast. That's at facebook.com/riseandshout.
It's a great time.
If you have not had a chance, you should subscribe to our show on your favorite podcast service. If you have anything to suggest about the podcast, do email us at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Thank you for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!